Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. A winter storm with snow and rain, as you might know, is moving into and across our region. Australia, too, is experiencing some rain this week, heavy at times, and hail, which will help a bit with the devastating wildfires. But those fires are expected to go on for months. Scientists and other experts are afraid that many of Australia's ecosystems may never recover from the damage that will become permanent. With me by phone is Dr. Brandon Collins. He's a research scientist with both the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Southwest Research Station in Albany and the Center for Fire Research and Outreach at the University of California, Berkeley. Dr. Collins, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Beth. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell me a bit about the rain, the storms that are happening right now? It looks like Sydney's experiencing it, areas of Melbourne, of Victoria. Do you know more about this?
You know, I don't have probably sort of the most up-to-date information on those storms. I better decline on that.
One thing we do know from California is heavy rain onto scorched earth can bring the risks of flooding. So that becomes yet another worry for them. The statistics are unimaginable when talking about the size of this fire. How much acreage? What do you know about the scope of the landscape that's burned?
Well, it does seem like it was not just a single fire, right? There was a lot of fire activity.
Right.
It seemed like a lot of individual fires that were burning throughout Australia, even including Western Australia. And so, I mean, it is quite extensive. I mean, we've seen, you know, fire quite a bit in California, but I think the extent that's going on, you know, across Australia probably is another order of magnitude higher. And like you said, so related to rain with a lot of exposed soil from fire burning the vegetation or the litter that was covering the ground, that is quite a concern, especially if it's a significant rain event.
Will you expand on what I said in the introduction, that scientists believe the damage might already be done, that some of the impact will be unrecoverable?
Yeah, there is some evidence. I mean, it's a really fire-adapted continent, if you can think about it as a whole. You know, fire, especially fire at a large extent, is not new to Australia. So many of the species have adaptations to deal with it. They can resprout following these large fires. But it seems that in some of the recent events, that the regenerative or the resprouting capacity is actually weakening a little bit in some of these species that we thought would have done fine. And it's not entirely clear what the mechanisms are there. It could be flat out related to the intensity that these fires are burning hot, quite a bit of heat released, and then also some interaction with the climate, maybe in the environment, the timing immediately following the fire, where moisture may not be as available for longer periods to support sort of that regeneration. So it's not, I mean, I wouldn't sort of, you know, put it in crisis mode yet, but I think it's concerning what some of the recent stuff has been shown.
So an estimated 1 billion animals have died in the fires in Australia. The number of homes destroyed is up around 2,000. 28 people have died, including 4 firefighters. What else can you add to the picture to help us understand what these fires have done there?
Well, I mean, that says a lot. I mean, it's those statistics are pretty staggering when you think about it. And it's really, the notion that these are fire-adapted ecosystems is very true, but the problem is the extent that it's happening. When there are so many individual fires and they're covering such a large area, there's really the sort of refuge, you know, the ability to escape fire or to, you know, for you know, critters to move to unburned habitats while the burned habitats are recovering is really limited in that context, because there's so much burned area. So I think that's the thing that really stands out is that there's a lack of sort of these areas, you know, these refuges, and that will persist for you know, a few years, if not a little longer, as the burned areas are recovering. So it's kind of a it's a little staggering, I guess, and when you think about, you know, what the future holds.
Your specialty, Dr. Collins, is forest resiliency. Given what you just said, and some of the comparison in California has been like Firenado or firestorm or mega fires, the heat and intensity, what do you do in forest resiliency to combat that?
We struggle with that, honestly, here. And it's becoming more apparent lately with some of these really large fires, because they're the scale of the fires, and I'm just talking about individual fires, not even the collective when you sort of sum them up over the years, but the scale of some of these individual fires, and it's not just the overall fire area, but it's the scale of area burned severely, where the dominant trees are killed, that exceeds the capacity of the forest to sort of regenerate themselves, in our particular forest, because they depend on seed blown in from live trees that are outside of that severely burned area. And so we just really struggle to reforest areas following these large fires. I mean, we can go in there and plant, but we just aren't keeping up. I mean, we can't do it at the scale that these things are happening.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Dr. Brandon Collins. He's speaking to us from Berkeley. He is a wildfire research scientist. How are fires of this magnitude stopped? I referred to weather. Some areas of Australia are now getting rain, thunderstorms, even hail is being reported. And the seasons are different down under. It's actually summertime there for another month. So what's going to happen? Will it just have to burn itself out?
I think to a certain extent, yes. I mean, when the when the weather changes, In that case, that's sort of the extreme weather changes when you go from pretty intense burning conditions to rain. That's a pretty abrupt change, but it doesn't necessarily require that. It needs some slackening of whether it be the wind or the relative humidity, and then some breaks in the fuel. And so, like for us in California, when we have large fires, there is quite a period of time that the perimeter of the fire is so big that we cannot necessarily sort of dig a line or cut the fuel away. We just sort of wait until it burns to natural breaks or even unnatural breaks like roads. So it takes the combination of both burning to those breaks and then the slackening of the weather. Because if the weather doesn't slack, then some of those breaks can actually be burned right over.
Right. These fires in Australia are being described as bigger than the size of the state of Indiana. So you're right. What do you do except work with small perimeters? I want to add that some of the California firefighters who are talking about their experience assisting there under the U.S. Forest Service are talking about this being very emotional on a couple levels, including the fact that people in Australia experience firsthand what people in Northern California and some of the Western states with these big fires have. And that personal understanding, that very human factor, has to play in here somehow, at least in acknowledgement, in investment in what we do with wildfires. How important is that to you as a research scientist?
Well, it is. It's been a motivating factor for some time now. It just, it wasn't until maybe the recent last few years that we've really had impacts to communities, and I mean to large populations. And you know, before it was we've lost homes to wildfire for a long period of time. Australia has too. This isn't necessarily new. Again, it's probably the scale that's a little bit new to them. But it is. I mean, it's something that does motivate a lot of us. Is that obviously now it's the stakes are a lot higher when so many people are being impacted. But there's also a sort of an emotional side. I mean, it might sound a little odd, but the emotional side to losing forests. You know, these are 100, 200 years old trees that are going to, that may or may not come back, on their own. And then how long will it take to get that mature forest and all the other things associated with that back? So it's, there's two parts to people of us that are involved in fire. Of course, the human side is really, really driving things, but I think a lot of us also really care about the ecological side as well.
So on the ecological side, tell me about recovery. Where does it even begin on something of this magnitude?
Well, it's partly what, you know, where can you get on the landscape, knowing that you cannot get to every piece of ground that's been burned or even burned severely. Some places are really remote or just take too long to get there. You could get there, but it would just take too long. So you start thinking about, you know, we're given the limited resources, and everyone's going to be limited, you know, in some way or another, especially when fires are this big. You just think about where you can get that you can, you think you can make a difference. And then once you start establishing some of those areas, then you think about what's their likelihood of experiencing another fire, in the time that it would take for these trees to sort of, build up some defense to fire, if you think about it like that. When you plant trees, you know, young trees up until a certain period are pretty vulnerable to fire burning again. So you want to think about, okay, I want to be able to protect this investment, so you have to do some kind of, fuel or vegetation management. So it is, I think that triage sort of thing is a little overused, but it's really kind of constrained by a lot of operational pieces that are really different they're really context-driven on whatever particular landscape you're looking at.
So two other arenas to talk about would be prevention and climate change. And I'm just going to open this up on the aspect of climate change, because both Australia and California have landscape that burns, as you said. As everyone knows, historically, it's land that burns. And yet, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and NASA say 2019 was the second hottest year on record. So we have the climate change factor. What's ahead, and how do you factor that in to future predictions into the research that you're doing for looking ahead to prevention?
In its simplest, in the simplest response, the need is more, only more immediate, because the likelihood of wildfire is going to, it is growing. So the need, there is to do forest management, to do restoration that is going to get these forests in a state that they can tolerate fire. We're never going to eliminate fire from these ecosystems, and in fact, it's going to be much more a part of these forests. And so, what we want to do is get forests to a state where they can burn, but burn and still survive, and still provide some of the services that forests provide us. And so, the climate piece to me, I think a lot of people see it as sort of a dooming, just dooming forests that they're going to go away and something else is going to come. And that's not, I don't see it that way. I see, a pretty long history of us sort of mismanaging these forests, trying to eliminate fire and even doing other things that have made it more vulnerable to fire. And I think we absolutely need to change that approach and start to incorporate fire, but the right kind of fire, and also get the structure of these forests in a way that they can tolerate fire and persist. So I think the point is we can't wait around anymore, and we can't really debate a whole lot. I mean, we certainly can learn a lot more going forward, but it's time.
Some of the language of restoration and forest management is becoming more conversational and more common as we learn more about wildfires. So will you tell me what some of those tools are? What do you think we need to do more of urgently in restoration and forest management for prevention?
Well, in simple terms, it's sort of all of the above. And all of the above includes mechanical thinning, which is that can be controversial, because some people see it as sort of logging by another name. But in fact, there are a number of safeguards in place, regulations, statutes and such, that sort of limit the amount of material that can be removed, and in particular large trees, which is something, it was a very important component of many of these forests. So there's not a lot of concern, I think, when it comes down to it, of overusing mechanical treatments. But in reality, those can't happen everywhere. Just there are so many other concerns operationally, even legally. We can't do mechanical treatments in wilderness areas. We have limited capacity to do mechanical treatments in national parks. So the other side of it is obviously burning. We have to burn, and we have to burn a lot. And it's so hard to imagine, it makes this weird story that we have to tell where we want more fire, but we want more good fire, not the bad fire. And so we really kind of struggle with that message. But I think it's important to understand how much of a role fire played in these forests historically. Fire burned every 10 to 15 years in our forests in California. And it was doing a lot of interesting work in terms of shaping the forest in a really variable sort of patchy pattern, which allowed for a lot of different habitat types for different birds and small mammals. So it's something we aren't comfortable with it because we don't know it, but I think it's something we need to learn to get more comfortable with is using a lot more good fire in conjunction with those mechanical treatments.
Hmm. Are you planning to make a trip to Australia?
Not right away. I mean, no. I mean, I would love to. I'd love to get down there. I've never actually been there, but I think, you know, it'd be a great place to learn. They have used fire a heck of a lot more than we have, and done it very, very successfully. And I'd be curious, one of the things I was really curious about this recent suite of wildfires is to what extent their previous burning, which was prescribed burning, actually, you know, impacted some of these wildfires, or did it, you know, was there no impact? Because they had a great history for a while of doing lots of large scale, I mean, thousands of acres prescribed burns that we are still hoping to achieve.
Well, thank you. This is an ongoing conversation, and it's great to see the headlines about the shifting weather pattern down there, although, as I said, the fires are going to continue for months. Our conversations like this are going to continue for years, for the rest of our lives. So I really appreciate your time today, Dr. Collins.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me.
That is Dr. Brandon Collins. He's a research scientist with the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Southwest Research Station in Albany and the Center for Fire Research and Outreach at UC Berkeley. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. Up next, Jeff Hudson joins me in the studio. Notable orchestra concerts all across our listening area are in this week's Sound Advice.